This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive.
Well, it's midnight in New York City, and you're tuned to listener support, non-commercial, WBAI 99.5 FM here in New York City. And, you know, I was looking around on the computer here, looking for the here.
And it's 1, 2, 3, what are we fighting for?
People who listen to WBAI have a better understanding of history and how it unfolds. They are generally much more knowledgeable than the rest of the population about current events.
I heard somebody say, "Now, where's Mandela?" Well, Mandela's dead because Saddam Hussein killed all the Mandelas.
Now, he obviously doesn't listen to WBAI. Don't fall victim to the same level of confusion. Listen and support WBAI Radio. It's all I guess. Woo! And it's
1, 2, 3. What are we fighting for? A zillion barrels of oil. Yeah. Zillion and barrels of oil and crude, a little bit of Family Feud. Yeah, we've heard that one before. Anyway, happy birthday, Nelson Mandela, right? Who's still alive and kicking. In spite of what our president seems to think. Was what, earlier this week, wasn't it? 3 or 4 days ago, there was a big bash for him in London. So anyway, it's now it's 1 minute after midnight, and well, I guess that means that now it's time for this.
Moorish. Orthodox. Radio. Crusade. Anarchism for the global city. Radical environmentalism for the concrete jungle. Esoteric explorations of the secret history of rebel culture. The Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. Every Tuesday at midnight after the news, only on listener-supported, non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. Be there.
Thank you. En un verso, un joven trovador llamado Epideto amaba a una pálida bailarina de la noche. En los bailes de la tierra, imaginaba tocar solo para Castillo. Una tarde, el trovador la vio sentada en el jardín bajo una cúpula sostenida por 5 columnas de alabastro blanco. A sus pies, una alfombra recamada de oro con rosas trabajadas en seda blanca y roja. Al verlo, ella sonrió. Con esa sonrisa le regaló su vida. Epideto comprendió que la favorita que mirara a otro hombre que no fuera el sultán debía pagar con su existencia. Esta es la historia de amor de Casina y Epideto.
Welcome aboard to the Morris Orthodox Radio Crusade, here on listener-supported, non-commercial, WBAI 99.5 FM. And Mary Soul was just remarking that I get the most amazing music, which I certainly agree. Where do you think that was from? Okay, now, all right. At the end, you've got the voiceover in Spanish, which is a giveaway, right? But I'll bet you didn't think that it was from a Spanish-speaking country when it first started. Right, you probably thought it was from North Africa or somewhere like that, or the Middle East. Believe it or not, that's from Cuba.
Oh my God!
Can you believe it? It's from a compilation called "Si para Usted: The Funky Beats of Revolutionary Cuba, Volume 1," which is all music from the 1960s, kind of psychedelic themed Cuban music from the 1960s.
Wow.
So, pretty hot stuff. Mary Soul, what was the voiceover? What were they talking about? I couldn't quite make it out.
I don't remember. I'm sorry. I will have to listen to it again. Yeah, sorry.
Any just a word or two, maybe, of what the basic theme was?
No.
Oh, okay. Anyway, we're joined once again by Mary Soul Ruiz of the Brecht Forum, and also by Kazembe Balagun of the Brecht Forum. Welcome aboard.
Hey, what's going on? How you doing?
Pretty good. And you know, I've got music from this is. I was kind of going to make this before I found out you guys were coming on. I was going to make this a very music heavy show because I happen to be utterly exhausted at the moment. So and didn't have much time to prepare. So I've been saving up. Actually, I've got in addition to this. Cuban compilation of kind of psychedelic and garage rock music from Cuba in the 1960s. I've got two volumes from World Psychedelic Classics, which is a compilation which was put out by some label in Germany from music from all over the world, in with an emphasis on the so-called Third World. From that era, and I've got volume 3, Love's a Real Thing, the funky, fuzzy sounds of West Africa. I didn't come up with the name. They came up with the name. And also Mexican psychedelic music, which I believe is volume 2. So this is all really good stuff. So this is going to be the theme of the show, Third World Psychedelia, authentic Third World Psychedelia from the 1960s. But, well, we've got you guys here, so we should take advantage of you while we got you here as well, because it kind of lets me off the hook. I was up until 10 o'clock in the morning working. I was up all night. Usually I try to get to sleep by 5, but tonight I was up working until 10 a.m., after working all day yesterday, putting out the new issue, it being the first of the month of... the perennial albatross around my neck, my online journal, World War IV Report. So it's up. You can read about it. Our lead story this month is about, okay, I'm going to test you guys. You're ready to be tested? You're ready to be put on the spot?
Bring it. Bring it on.
Which two Horn of Africa countries briefly went to war with each other last month?
Ooh, would it be Somalia and Ethiopia?
They've been at war for quite a while, actually, sort of. I mean, Ethiopia is occupying Somalia, and there's like an insurgency going on, of course. But no, there was more of a traditional war where two states went to war with each other. Okay, nobody noticed. And which world power, which European power jumped into the fray and sent warships? See, it's amazing. This stuff doesn't even get any coverage. It doesn't even get any coverage. Okay, you want to know?
Yeah.
Eritrea went to war with Djibouti.
Whoa. Oh.
And France sent warships to back up Djibouti.
That's wild.
Yeah. And it hasn't been resolved. There hasn't been any fighting for the past 3 weeks, but it hasn't been resolved. In fact, Eritrea, according to Djibouti, is still occupying a couple of islands, which they illegally seized. And the amazing thing about it is it all went down exactly as the Somalian rebel factions signed a peace accord with the government in Djibouti, which was brokered by the UN. And, of course, Eritrea has been backing the insurgents in Somalia. So there's some theorizing that it might have been a ploy by Eritrea to sabotage the peace process. And Djibouti is it hosts the largest French military force in Africa, and also probably the largest American U.S. military force in Africa as well. And whereas Eritrea is very much posing themselves as the anti-imperialist vanguard in the region now. So if you're interested in this sort of thing, you certainly aren't going to get it from the mainstream media. So do log on to WorldWar4Report.com. That's www.arabic4report.com and read our lead story by our correspondent Sarkis Pogosian, who's got an in-depth report on the crisis. So that's what I've been doing for the past, oh my God, I was working on it all weekend and straight on through to the wee hours this morning. You know, it's strange. Some people seem to think that just because I don't work a 9-to-5 office job that I just sit around gazing at my navel all day. I don't know where people get these baseless prejudices from, because I actually work very, very hard at what I do for very little money. Labor of love, as it were. Well, that certainly is what WBAI is about. It's about a labor of love. And I assume it's what the Brecht Forum is about as well.
Yeah.
So, Kazembe, what's been going on at the Brecht recently?
Oh, wow. There's been a lot of stuff going on at the Brecht. In fact, I just got back from a panel on Which Way is Left, discussing left organizing and movement. And for those listeners who don't know, the Brecht Forum is a 30-year-old left cultural institution, very much similar to BAI, acting as cultural anchors of the New York City left, as a body of definitely as a place of rebellion and revolution, and thinking about how we create fundamental change in this country and around the world. And we have our summer schedule has just come out. And we have a very exciting summer schedule of events that are going on. There's a couple of things I want to talk about. Particularly, the one thing is on July 11th to the 13th, we're actually going to be having a 3-day seminar on the food crisis and what capitalism has to do with it. And the title of the seminar is Dumb Belly Full, But We Hungry. And I know that you, as a music aficionado, know that that's from the Bob Marley song.
Sure is.
And so that's going to be a 3-day conversation on the food crisis, both bringing together some of the leading left academics as well as grassroots organizers, moving in discussing ways in which we can confront the current food crisis. Because as you know, there's a lot of stuff going on with biofuels and shortages, and there's been food rebellions in Haiti. So this is a very timely topic for the
Haiti and Somalia and Djibouti and Mauritania and Mali and just about any other country in the global south you care to mention.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think if we really think about what's going on in the planet, like the various breadbaskets of the planet, the various places in the planet that we usually think of as like lush and green, are in crisis. You know, and these things always have, like, their roots within this whole question of private ownership, private property. So those kind of connections are going to be made clear at the three-day intensive.
Three-day intensive, wow.
Yeah, this is actually the 30th year we're doing it. Since the Brecht has been founded, we've been doing these summer intensives, bringing together some of the leading thinkers and activists to really kind of have a conversation. And not only just a conversation, but also a lot of times, you know, people leave the intensive, leave the seminars with plans of action about how to, you know, how we're going to actually confront some of these pressing problems that we're facing all in all. So I think this is a really great opportunity for people to, if they weren't interested in plugging into activism and to left politics, you know, in addition to like the stuff that you do in terms of the radio show and World War IV report, to also come in and check out what's going on in the Brecht Forum in terms of the intensive. In addition to that, you know, a lot of times, you know, we, you know, as political people, you realize that it's not just about the political economy, but it's also about the mind and the body. So there's a couple of classes that we're offering in the Brecht right now. One is yoga. A lot of people don't realize that, you know, you can take activist yoga at the Brecht.
Makes it activist yoga, per
se? Yeah, well, you know, other than the fact that, you know, we put that title on top of it, you know, what really makes it activist yoga is that, you know, one of the things is that a lot of times when we're on the left and we're doing the work that we're doing, like, for example, you're saying yourself, you're working 72 hours a day. You know, sometimes, you know, we need that space,
yes,
to kind of like relax and chill out and be able to be in tune with our bodies. So really, it's really geared toward a lot of us who are super busy to really kind of take time for ourselves to be in tune with our bodies.
Indeed.
And to be comfortable with that.
I do, yeah, bicycle yoga myself.
Oh, that's it. That's
only thing that keeps me sane.
What exactly is bicycle yoga? If you don't
it just means riding.
Oh, right, right. Okay.
keeps me in shape physically and mentally to whatever slight extent I am in shape physically and mentally. It's thanks to my bicycle. And so, who's going to be speaking at the food?
Oh, well, I'm glad you asked that, because it's going to be a really fantastic lineup. We have Vivek Chibber, Rick Wolf, Randy Martin, Heather Rogers, who did this really fascinating film on garbage and waste, and she'll be discussing Cleo Silvers, who's a local organizer in for a Better Bronx, which is a group of community organizers who are doing sustainable development in the South Bronx, as well as Sam Anderson, who is the author of Black Holocaust for Beginners. He's going to be doing an excellent panel on race in America and a connection to food. And there's going to be panels on gender and food. So it's going to be a really, really fascinating lineup.
And you, Kasembe?
Oh, yeah. I'm gonna be, you know, chipping in somewhat, you know, and particularly in some of the gender stuff that I have a certain background in, but it's gonna be a really great panel. It's gonna be from July 11th to the 13th, I think it's a very timely conversation to start having, particularly around this whole entire question of the environment, because it seems to me that the politicians who are running this, their solution to the energy crisis seems to be more degradation to the society, like more biofuels and less about renewable energy. And how do we as radicals counteract that? How do we really talk about that stuff in the public sphere? How do we really get that stuff, the information out there to our communities and really kind of put out some real alternatives that can be really focused? You know, Raj Patel just came out with a book called Stuffed and Starved. And, you know, it talks about like the whole question of obesity in the first world and also starvation in the third world.
Right.
But how do we really kind of like understand these things and how that relates to capitalism?
Who's that author again?
That was Raj Patel. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Raj Patel, and the book is Stuffed and Starved, and he actually spoke at the Brecht Forum last semester.
Mm-hmm. And you spoke tonight. You were on a panel tonight about the direction of the contemporary left in this country.
Oh, yes. I was on a panel with Kamau Franklin and Juliet Uccelli, and Hank Williams on the direction of the left, and it was a packed house. And you know, and one of the great things about the Brecht, and one of the great things about BAI is the fact that we're able to kind of carry on these kind of horizontal conversations that really kind of like people feel empowered to do something afterwards. So even after the conversation we had tonight, people actually started like hanging around and talking about, well, how do we get this information? Now we have this information, and we had this panel. How do we synthesize this stuff to actually kind of move forward?
So what perspectives were voiced and what issues were addressed?
Oh, well, definitely. One of the biggest questions, and I think that the Which Way Is Left panel was actually organized by the Freedom World Socialist Organization and is part of their new pamphlet they're putting out. And one of the biggest things that we talked about tonight was what have been some of the issues in terms of building organization within the left? Why is it that, you know, with all the stuff that's going on in society, why are we so fragmented on the left? And one of the things that was discussed tonight was the question of really, like, how do we really create a transformative vision for society that really kind of sparks people's imaginations and get them moving into the streets? And another part of it too, and a big part of it is too, and you know, is definitely looking at the whole entire question of self-determination. How do we bring resources into communities that are struggling, and actually show and actually illustrate to the people the fact that they have the capacity to make change in the world? And I think those were some of the conversations that we had, and also the question of what kind of organizations do we want to build, you know, and how do we, you know, incorporate what they call prefigurative models of the future into the now, rather than looking into revolution and the question of revolution as something way, way over there in the distant future. But how do we really bring the future into the now? How do we really kind of build people's capacity to do things like create community gardens, to create, defense forces within the community that, so we don't have to call the cops? Like, how do we create, like, justice systems so we don't have to use these court systems? You know, how do we control the distribution of the media? You know, so these are some of the things that kind of were kind of raised tonight, and, like, you know, and it's part of ongoing conversations that I think that a lot of people who consider themselves, you know, revolutionaries, radicals, progressives on the left are wanting to have, you know, because I think that a lot of people want to move forward and want to see some of this stuff on the ground.
Well, I need to ask, just playing devil's advocate here, were there any, shall we say, tendencies represented other than Freedom Road Socialist Organization? I mean, you invoked the term horizontal dialogue. Right. So, I mean, one of the big problems, which is keeping the left fragmented, marginalized, and powerless, is that there's all these sectarian organizations out there which are not interested in horizontal dialogue, but are interested in preaching from a soapbox and talking down to everybody and saying, we've got the correct line, follow us.
Well, yeah, I agree with you on that point. And I think that one of the interesting things about what's coming up in terms of the what I call the new left is like looking at the issue, that really kind of figuring out ways in which we can find ways that we can really kind of coalesce around certain issues and work together. You know, and you mentioned that, you know, like whether or not other tendencies, what was beautiful about tonight, I think what's beautiful about, you know, the kind of like vibrancy in the left that's kind of growing, it was that tonight you had people who were revolutionary nationalists, who were queer activists, who were Marxists, who were anarchists, who were anti-authoritarians, all coming into the room together and kind of having this kind of like strong dialogue. Now, of course, you know, like, you know, we're one big family, but like all families, we're going to have fights. You know, like, we're going to also have, like, disagreements. We're going to have points of disunity. But I think that one of the things that we're understanding is that there's things that are bigger than us, right? It's bigger than the sort of ideology. I mean, really, what we're really facing is what Tony Cade Barbara once asked of us, says, can we save the world from the psychopaths? You know what I'm saying? And I think that's our historical challenge. Can we save the world? You know what I'm saying? As a left, as the people who take on this work to really push humanity forward, can we save the world from the psychopaths? And I think as long as we have that question in our fold, you know, we'll find more points of unity and more stuff that we can work with. And, you know, and one of the things is that, you know, and our learning also has to be different too, Bill. I think that the way in which we learn things has to be much more broader, has to be much more, you know, and I hate to keep sounding like a broken record, but I think that's one of the reasons why, like organizations like BAI and the Breck Forum are so important, because you have such a diversity of voices that come out that really make it, you know, it gets us out of our comfort zones of just the way we think all the time, and we're able to really kind of push forward and create new syntheses and new forms of knowledge.
Well, that certainly is always a challenge.
Oh yeah.
So how does the Breck Forum sustain itself, if I may ask that question?
Well, we don't have any rich uncles, we don't have any rich aunts.
I mean, that's certainly a perennial question here at WBAI, all listeners are painfully aware.
Carefully. Oh yeah. I mean, like just like BAI, I mean, we depend on the kindness of strangers. You know, like seriously, a significant. A very small percentage of our comes through the door, and as you know, I don't know if you know this or not, but we have a tradition of what he called a sliding scale.
Yes.
And no one's turned away, and that's based on like the whole Thai dictum of the Communist Manifesto, which is like each according to their means, each according to their needs, each according to their ability. So all the events of the Brecht are accessible to community, but the primary way we do it is through sustainers. And definitely, is a point that, you know, both, you know, institutions like BAI and Breck Forum be sustained by the community. You know what I'm saying? Because that's what we always look to. And not only just in terms of sustenance in terms of economics, but also in terms of programming. You know, because, like, you know, when we need programming to happen, when we need people to talk on panels, when we need people to, like, even help out and volunteer and doing the door and like helping out in terms of like, you know, the basic running of the Breck Forum, you know, that all comes from the community. That comes from people like, you know, and we've been very fortunate to have a situation where, like, just like BAI, people have been very responsive to us and been very supportive of the institution. And we're very thankful for that support.
Well, I should say that it's, 12:28 in the a.m. here on listener-supported non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. And this is the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. My name is Bill Weinberg, and we're in the studio with Kazembe Balogun and Marisol Ruiz of the Brecht Forum. Okay, here's another question which I've got. I mean, despite having been a follower and participant at the Brecht Forum for many, many years, I've been a little bit unclear on exactly what is the relationship between the Brecht Forum and the Marxist school. Are they identical, or is the Marxist school an entity of the Brecht Forum, or how does that work?
Well, the Marxist school, originally the Brecht Forum started out as the Marxist school, and it became the Brecht Forum, in the maybe the late 80s, early 90s. And the Marxist school is a function within the Brecht Forum, along with the Institute for Popular Education and Top Lab, which is the Theater of the Oppressed Laboratory. The Theater of the Oppressed Laboratory is one of the only institutions on the Northeast. There's only two institutions in the whole of America that actually popularizes the work of Augusto Boal, who is the author of the book The Theater of the Oppressed, and does the Theater of the Oppressed workshops every year at the Brecht Forum. The New York Marxist School is is an entity within the BRCC forum. It's responsible for putting on the summer intensive. And really, I mean, in a deep sense, I mean, the BRCC forum is a Marxist space. And at the same time, you know, because of the nature of Marxism and being able to embrace all the various political ideologies and various political thoughts that go on, we also open it up to other political trends. Because one of the things that the reason the BRCC forum was founded in the 70s was because there was no place where people can actually sit down and talk, you know, and kind of hash out their differences, you know, and like when you're talking about the fragmentation of the left, you know, sometimes you need a space where people can just go and just talk and be able to get just be in dialogue with each other and even argue with each other at the same time, feel a sense of safety and feel like they're being respected and heard. And if you look at the programming at the BRCC, I mean, there's definitely a range of different programming that goes on, from the Marxist left, the revolutionary left, to even the anarchist left at times. So I think that, you know, like I said before, it's a really diverse place, and I think that, you know, and is one of the things that I particularly enjoy, you know, is one of the uniquenesses of a place like the BRCC.
All right, so what are the summer intensives?
Oh, wow, the summer intensives, July 11th, 12th, 13th. And, you know, if people are interested in registering, they can go on our website, which is www.breckforum.org. And I'll give that again, www.breckforum.org, or they can call 212-242-4201. And once again, the intensives are July 11th to the 13th. It's going to be a lot of fun, and actually there's going to be child care provided.
Oh, that's going to be the food event.
Yeah, that's going to be the food event. That's going to be the food event, the globalization, Dumb Belly Full, But We're Hungry, the globalization event. In addition, I didn't even mention this, but we have, you know, having Marisol over here, we also offer Spanish classes.
Yeah, I was going to get to that.
And that's another thing that we also offer. You know, I know there's a lot of people who will be going down to the AIDS conference in Mexico in a couple of weeks, and a lot of people who need Spanish for their jobs, a variety. And we offer Spanish classes particularly geared to social workers, movement activists, teachers, and it's really a lot of fun. And they're eight-week courses, and, you know, they're definitely tremendous in terms of, like, what you learn, not only in terms of the language, but also in terms of the history as well.
History and culture. And
oh, yeah.
Mm. So, Marisol, you do beginning and advanced Spanish at the BRCC Forum, but not intermediate.
No.
Just the extremes.
Exactly.
And you take the beginning class out for Colombian food at...
Yes.
Where is the place again?
El Basurero.
All right, El Basurero.
Y Fonda Antioqueña.
Right, that's the place right next door, mm-hmm. Right? It's a more traditional kind of place, right? That's a place I like better. And that's, where is that again? That's in Astoria,
right? In Astoria, yes.
Mm-hmm. On Steinway Street?
On Steinway Street, yeah.
Good food. And, okay, but getting back to your roots, you still do the basic meat and potato classes in Marx's Capital, right?
Oh, yeah, I mean... I mean, definitely. I mean, every year we have David Harvey, Bill DeFazio. They do excellent classes on Volume 1 through 3. You know what I'm saying? Anyone who's interested in reading Capital. We also offer another class that we're going to be having in August. Is going to be that's going to be really fascinating. Is with Rick and Harriet Wolf on psychology and economics, looking at a Marxist perspective. And there's a ton of different classes. We also offer classes on organizing around gentrification, which is actually obviously a big issue. And another one is that's going to be really interesting is that for many people may not know, but we've been having a 1968 Revisited series. This past spring, we've had one of the most successful times at the BRCC Forum. We actually had the philosopher Slavoj Žižek. speak and we're actually going to be continuing that with Dave Zeron He's going to be doing a People's History of Sports in the United States later on this year. So, you know, and that's part of our 68 series. And you know, so there's a lot of fun stuff going on in the Breck Forum, a lot of interesting stuff. And, you know, similar to BAI and what you're doing, Bell, you know, really kind of getting the word out and really kind of like, you know, putting the information out and hopefully turning information to power.
Right. We sure do hope so. We could use some of that power. Why don't we take another musical break? Should we hear more of this delicious Cuban psychedelic music from the 1960s?
Oh, it sounds terrific.
And then we'll mix it up a little bit more in a few minutes here. Let me see. You know, I only listened to this a couple of times. I'm not going to find the cut that I want to play. Here, I think maybe it's... Well, here, if it's not this one, we'll just play the next one as well. All right, more from let's see, who did we just hear? Did you recognize the bass line on that first one here? And I'm the only like aging hippie here, so I'd be the only one to recognize that bass line from Los Van Van was very, very close, not identical, but very, very close to the classic acid rock number Inagada Da Vida by Iron Butterfly. And after that, we heard Los Reyes. And, let's see. Why don't we, all right, should we hear, let's take a break from Cuba for a little bit. Should we hear something from 60s psychedelic music from Mexico or from West Africa? You call it.
Mexico.
Okay. Let's see. Okay. Here, cut one on this one is pretty good. Whoops, I got to hit eject. Come on out. That one doesn't want to come out. Oh, boy. Once again, being faked out by technology. Okay. One, two, three. right. That one definitely had much more of a garage rock kind of feel to it, didn't it? That was Los Dug Dugs with Lost in My World, singing in English, A Pesar de Ser Mexicanos, from Mexican psychedelic music, part of the World Psychedelic Classics series from Normal Records in Bonn, Germany. So, well, all right. Well, we've got one more disc to dig into. So we've got plenty of music to play. I've got an announcement, though, which is that there's going to be... are you guys aware of the case of this notorious landlord family, the Economakises, who own a lot of properties around the city, particularly in my neighborhood, the Lower East Side? And they were in, they've been in the news a bit recently because they've got a building at 47 East 3rd Street where, you know that there's this loophole in the law where even rent-controlled or rent-stabilized tenants can be evicted if the landlord says, okay, I need that apartment for my personal family use, right? Well, this Economakis family is coming along and saying that we need the entire five-story building for our personal family use. They want to, like, move in a family of, oh, I don't know, a couple and two kids or something like that, and evict the entire building and, you know, turn, like, entire apartments into, you know, oh, this will be our den, and this will be our computer room, and this will be our closet. Absolutely appalling, you know, here in the midst of, you know, this neighborhood, which is being rapidly gentrified, and, you know, the old school residents who've been there for many, many, many years, such as myself, are like, you know, clinging by the skin of our teeth and just scraping to try to get the rent together every month. And these people are, you know, coming in and trying to turn an entire tenement into their personal mansion. And it's been going back and forth in the courts, and at the moment it seems that the Economakises have got the upper hand. I'm not sure if all the appeals have been exhausted. I should be more up to speed on it than I am, and I will be by next week. I'll have the opportunity to announce this again next week, and I will have the details nailed down. But I do know that it's an atrocious situation, and that the Economakises need to be slapped for... attempting to evict an entire building, an entire tenement apartment building, to turn it into their personal mansion. And somebody has stepped up to the plate to smack the Economakises. And there is going to be 1 week from this coming Friday. This is to say Friday, July 11th at 8 p.m. That was, in fact, Friday, July 11th. Does anybody have a calendar handy?
Here. It is.
It yes. is? Yeah, okay, good. I guess I'm a little bit confused here. Time always slips away from me much faster than I can process it. Yes, indeed, Friday is going to be July 11th. Not this Friday, but the Friday after. So we'll have the opportunity to announce this again. But certainly, many residents of the Lower East Side, any of the old school residents like myself, are going to want to be out there to slap the Economakises. There's going to be a let them eat cake rally to make the point that the Economakises are acting like Marie Antoinette, quite obviously, which indeed they are. So bring cake and donuts. Bring cake and donuts on Friday, July 11th at 8 p.m. Bring cake and donuts to 47 East 3rd Street. And this is by a group of people who are calling themselves the Slacktivists, the up-and-coming avant-garde community group on the Lower East Side, inimitably joining community organizing with spirited street theater, shall we say. So join the Slacktivists Friday, July 11th, 8 p.m., to slap the Economakises. Bring cake and donuts to 47 East 3rd Street. That's right off the corner of 2nd Avenue Once again, next, not this coming Friday, but a week from this coming Friday at 8 p.m., 47 East 3rd at 2nd Avenue. We'll have the opportunity to announce this again and next week, and we will, because, you know, there's a lot more programming I want to do about the rapidly changing face of New York City. And maybe if I can get some guests lined up, we'll devote some more programming to that next week, because it's really quite terrifying how quickly we are losing this city. And, you know, particularly, I mean, my own neighborhood, I just look around and I just can't believe how it just changes from week to week, it seems. And these big, you know, ugly, horrific, sterile, yuppie housing sky rises. It was sprouting like mushrooms faster than I can count them. And it just makes me feel like, you know, more and more of an alien in the city of my birth, goddammit, you know?
Yes.
So, anyway, Kazembe, you mentioned that the BRIC Forum has done some programming around the whole issue of gentrification. Maybe you can speak a little bit more about that.
Well, the same.
Whoops. I'm sorry. I thought I had your mic up. Okay,
no, no
try
problem.
Again. There we go. Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, this the same thing going on in the east. I mean, on the east side is happening on the west side and throughout Manhattan.
Oh, sure.
I mean, it was unfortunate. One of my favorite restaurants of all time, Florent, closed.
Which one?
Florent.
Where is that?
That's on Gansevoort Street, and it was a nice, like, 24-hour diner. You know, the wait staff was, like, really cool. It wasn't, like, snooty at all.
What was it called?
Florent.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and they closed on Sunday.
Oh, no.
You know, and
well, they were just like a sort of an American food type
diner?
Yeah,
American food type diner, and you know, and really nice place to go to. It's been in the meatpacking district for years, and you know, and they, you know, the landlord decided to say, hey, you know, this is a great neighborhood. You know, let me try to charge you $30,000 a month for rent,
right.
and then they left. So obviously, that's been a big issue, and one of the things that we've been kind of focusing on at the BRIC, and really there was a really great class, is one of our teachers actually formulated a class looking at the question of the right to the city and gentrification, you know, and really looking at the issue of studying the issue of public space, because one of the biggest issues that we have is not only with these rapid changes in terms of gentrification, but the fact of, like, free space, public space, you know, a space where people can chill at and really kind of be relaxed in, you know, we're really losing a lot of that stuff, you know. So that was one of the focuses of the classes, and definitely some of the focusing on the programming that we're doing at the BRIC Forum now, looking at this whole type of question of, like, who has the right to the city? You know, who has the right to, you know, like, you know, should we, like, forego this right to the city that, you know, is the one of the cultural capitals of the world, or to whom should the city serve? You know, should it serve like the super rich, you know, or should it serve like, you know, be in the interest of the working classes and the people who create the wealth in the society? You know, so that's always a continuous conversation that we're having, and we want to see more of that in the upcoming year.
Right. Well, you know, this is an issue which is, you know, deeply, deeply frustrating to me, because it just seems like it's such a challenge to try to organize any real resistance to, you know, we're just being bulldozed, and we just seem to be losing it so fast. And, you know, people are, you know, struggling so hard to, you know, get the rent together every month to pay the landlord that they don't have any energy left over to organize. So it's almost like, you know, a catch-22 type situation.
I mean, I totally agree, and I mean, I think that that's a question of just like of reinvesting a lot of the creativity. You know, one of the things that really brought me into the left was like the visual politics of the squatter movement in the Lower East Side, and I think that if you look at what is possible, you know, we might learn some lessons from that movement. And, you know, and we might also learn lessons from, like, you know, different movements of, like, land-based movements in other parts of the world as well that really kind of, like, look at in terms of, like, banding together. And I think one of the things that's really kind of empowering about, like, the Third Street situation that you mentioned is that, you know, these individuals who who are living in that building decided not to just to roll over. I mean, they're actually trying to actually fight, and there's actually space for resistance, and I truly believe that, you know, and I think that, you know, but you know, we have to consistently, you know, organize, agitate, and educate. Those are the three key words, and I think we need to return to that in a real way.
Right. Well, you mentioned, you know, land-based cultures and the resistance which they've organized. And certainly, you know, I mean, I certainly feel that, you know, the Zapatistas in Mexico mm-hmm. and, you know, the Ogoni in Nigeria and many other examples which you can mention are, you know, real, you know, shining examples of, you know, struggles which we can learn from and which can inspire us. But, you know, the real challenge in New York City is that, I mean, these struggles are, you know, generally they're around ethnic identity. And while the Zapatistas are explicitly, you know, they call themselves, the zones which they control, they call them pluri-ethnic autonomous zones, and they reject the whole divide and conquer trip between the mestizos and the indígenas in Mexico. You know, nonetheless, you know, Maya identity is very, you know, very, very core to their struggle. It's very central. Mm-hmm. Whereas, and that's, you know, certainly also the case in, you know, lots of, you know, movements of land-rooted peoples to keep their lands around the world. Whether, you know, whether it's the Nasa in Colombia or the Ogoni in Nigeria, or I could say the Tibetans. Mm. The real challenge in New York is that, you know, we're from all over the world. You know, every cultural identity on earth practically is represented here in New York City. So you haven't got the same sort of, you know, cultural cohesion just as a given factor, which you've got, say, you know, in the Maya communities in Chiapas. Whereas here, you know, it's got to actually be consciously built. And meanwhile, of course, all of the divide and conquer numbers are being played on us, and it needs to be consciously combated.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, it's a particular challenge here in New York City.
I mean, no doubt. I mean, it is. I mean, if the United States is the belly of the beast, I mean, I don't know. I think New York City is the belly of the belly. You know, I was like, you know, I don't know how to put it. You know, in terms of like, we're looking at what we're like, you know, we're in the center of finance capital, we're in the center of culture, of wealth. At the same time, I think there's so much like tremendous amount of potential, and I think that, you know, I mean, one of the things is that I think that people are kind of like, you know, slowly but surely kind of waking up to, you know, what the potential is in terms of creating alliances around these issues. I mean, you know, when you have a situation that we have where, you know, there's people being put out in the Lower East Side, there's people being put out in Chinatown, people being put out in Harlem, in the Heights. I mean, the potential there is so tremendous to really create a multiracial, multi-issued organizations that really can lead a fight back. And I really believe that. I mean, I think that, you know, I mean, one of the things that I think that is oftentimes confusing to a lot of people, particularly dealing with our mayor, is our mayor, unlike Giuliani, this mayor is, like, very nice. You know, he'll smile in your face and, like, take away all your rights. And, like, no one feels that the sense of, like, wanting to fight back.
Right.
And I think that a lot of ways, you know, we need to really kind of, like, really point the analysis out to the fact that, you know, we have a billionaire mayor. This is a mayor who is a direct representative of the ruling class, and he needs to be stopped and he needs to be challenged, on the steps of City Hall, on the steps of, you know, he doesn't live in Gracie Mansion because I think that's a little too tacky for him,
right.
You know, but in front of his, definitely in front of his, you know, his East Side apartment, you know, saying, and I think that it's about movement building, it's about creating those centers and creating those networks that we're able to kind of do that type of work.
All right. I should say that it's now 2 minutes after 1 o'clock in the morning. Listener supported, non-commercial, WBAI 99.5 FM here in New York City. This is the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. My name is Bill Weinberg. We're in the studio with Kazembe Balagun and Marisol Ruiz of the Brecht Forum. And, well, there are a couple people calling in, but I'm more inclined to keep going with, here, we haven't heard anything from the third disc yet. What do you people say? Should we take a call or two just to see if anybody has something intelligent to say?
Okay. Why not?
Okay, why not? All right, just briefly, because I do want to at least play one cut off of World Psychedelic Classics 3, Love's a Real Thing, the funky, fuzzy sounds of West Africa. WBAI, you're on the air. No, you're not. WBAI, you're on the air.
Yes, hello?
Hello.
Yes, am I on the air?
That's right.
Okay, I'm enjoying the show tremendously. Let me turn my radio down.
Please do turn your radio
down.
Yes,
and I'd like to, Bill, if you could more slowly give the names of your guests and maybe spell some part of the brother's name. I'm definitely looking forward to what the Breck Forum is doing, but my comment is more on what is it? It's Kasavendi. Am I saying your name correctly?
Kazimbe, yes.
Kazimbe. And when I get off the air, please do spell it. I think what you mentioned earlier on about the left, the progressive community being fragmented, I think that really says it. And I think we have to put some focus into that because, I mean, what Bush and all the judges that have put in place and all the, you know, all the whatever, you know, has been put in place of the 8 years of Bush, what we don't seem to deal with is that Clinton had sort of laid the foundation for that. Mm-hmm. My question is, how do we not be so fragmented? And how is it that the progressive community, I have a friend who has a theory that the reason why the progressive and the left doesn't deal with the fact that the pathological liars didn't give us a good official conspiracy theory, you know, I mean, it's so obvious to me in terms of just the science of a so-called 9/11, which is a code in itself. Yeah, no, it's a legitimate issue because the right, my friend's theory was because people like Jim Mars and Alex Jones, people who had started off from the right but have since become, you know, much more aggressive.
No. Where do you get that from? Go to Alex Jones' website. It is full of the most rank xenophobia, build the fence, keep out the Mexicans, blah, 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 blah. Alex Jones is not he is not a progressive by any stretch of the imagination.
I understand what you're saying, but he was willing, Bill, to deal with something that most people in the left and the progressive community, I mean, if I could see...
I have to take issue with this. I really do. Okay.
Well, let me give you an example. If I could see, for example, if the buildings hadn't come down as a controlled demolition, you know, and all the...
There's no evidence to support that whatsoever.
But
there really isn't.
My point is that even if it had been something that was, you know, you could see a plane at the Pentagon in Pennsylvania, even if all that happened, the fact that what happened after the event says to me that for some reason, this is, and I like your guest comment, is that the left and the progressive community, I mean, Alex Jones aside, because he definitely got that right in terms of...
Okay, but it's not just Alex Jones. It's Eric Hufschmid. It's the other guy you mentioned. It's the whole coterie of them. They're all... Jim Mars, thank you. They're all coming out of the right.
And he did rule by secrecy.
Yes, I know.
So he did expose in terms of, you know, the game behind the game and the powers behind the powers. It would seem to me that because a certain segment of the left or the progressive have reached out to those people so that there's been kind of a more coming together. Somebody like Ralph and Meyer, okay, they dress the same issues and they have also the same problems with some of the people. But to me, I see it as an opportunity. And I want your guests to address the fact that, you know, even if we had a scene that made sense scientifically and you could see it before your eyes, what's been put in place, you know, behind the event? I mean, you know, you have to see the Lusitania, the USS Maine, the USS Liberty. It's important to see, those events in real time, not many years later. I mean, false flag operations happen all the time, but Ralph and Meyer were probably...
Okay, Kazembe, do you have any responses here?
Only thing I can say is, in terms of the 9/11 stuff, and I was actually there the day that stuff happened. I worked at the World Trade Center at the African Burial Ground Project, and that stuff was pretty real, I don't really pay any credence to, like, you know, conspiracies, theories around that stuff. In terms of left unity, in terms of, like, questions of progressiveness, I think that in a large sense, there's a lot of venues in which people can have dialogue. But something I mentioned to Marisol before is that as a left, as a progressive community, we have to decide what we want and actually put that out as, you know, in terms of really deciding what do we want to do. You know, I think in a lot of sense, one of the frustrating parts about sometimes activism is that we always talk about what we're against, but we never talk about what we're for. So I think that really in a real sense, you know, developing that capacity to really kind of put forward a transformative vision that actually moves people, that people feel in their gut, that they feel like they really want to kind of move on, is really kind of powerful. And I think that, you know, one of the questions I have to me, that in terms of when people bring up stuff around 9/11 and some other stuff around the government, is like, what is that really saying about, you know, the conditions in which we live in within the society? And what does it say about our government? You know what I'm saying? What people's perception of the government is, you know? I think there's a lot of room in the analysis in terms of really kind of like bringing together a real transformative vision that of what we want to accomplish and what we really want in the society. So,
well, I mean, look, this is obviously, you know, something which I've got very strong feelings about, but I really think with this 9/11 conspiracy stuff is dangerous and misguided and out of control.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, people, instead of actually, you know, looking to, for instance, Marx and developing a, you know, a structural analysis of, you know, power relations in the society that we live in. Instead, you know, we're looking to, you know, Alex Jones and Jim Mars talking about the Illuminati and the Masons and, you know, all these bizarre, you know, the Bilderbergers and whatever, all this conspiracy, you know, jive. And, you know, and all of this stuff, which is absolutely, you know, not warranted by any of the evidence about planted explosives in the World Trade Center, which, you know, it's just, I mean, it's simply... it's implausible. It's utterly implausible on the face of it. And instead, you know, this is what people are obsessing on. When I open the calls at WBAI, you know, 9 times out of 10, it seems, I'm going to get, you know, somebody talking about this. And they all give me the same line of, you know, nobody's talking about this. Everybody's afraid to talk about it. But that's all I ever hear. And, you know, and I don't hear, you know, actual, you know, structural analysis of what's wrong with society and what we can do about it. I don't hear, you know, people talking, you know, except for on some shows here, such as Where We Live and Building Bridges and certainly Housing Notebook. But I hear all too little on the left, generally in New York City, about people organizing to defend our homes and our neighborhoods against the development blitz which is going on. You know, and I hear practically nothing about what I consider to be the extremely vital task of the left in this country right now of building ties of human to human active solidarity with the civil opposition in Iraq, with the civil resistance, trade unionists, women's organizations, neighborhood assemblies, etc., who are trying to keep alive space for civil society in the midst of the horrific situation in Iraq, trying to prevent the privatization of the oil, and trying to get the U.S. out through civil struggle. I hear nothing about this. Instead, all I hear is, all this talk about planted explosives in the World Trade Center. It's extremely frustrating. And people cutting slack for, you know, these right-wing hoodlums. And you heard it here. I'm not afraid to say it. Right-wing hoodlums like Jim Mars and Alex Jones. You know, and it's not even, you know, that, okay, we can, you know, disagree with them about certain things and have a dialogue about the xenophobia and the Holocaust revisionism and all the evil, evil, evil stuff that goes along with them. That stuff is not even addressed. It's not even addressed. And it's gotten to the point where even WBAI has offered, you know, Eric Hufschmid, you know, videos about the World Trade Center as a premium. Just as we offered back during the coup period, so it's more forgivable, it was different leadership here at BAI, just like we offered Jim Mars' book, Rule by Secrecy, as a premium. So, I'm sorry for ranting, but, you know, this is why...
Well deserved.
I'm reluctant to take phone calls. The caller asked you about the spelling of your name, because...
That's how that would be K-A-Z-E-M-B-E, Kazembe. You know, and the last name Balogun actually comes from the new African anarchist Kwesi Balogun, and that's B-A-L-A-G-U-N.
Who died in prison a few years back, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, yes. I'm actually working on a biography of his life.
Indeed.
And can you give websites out?
Sure,
yeah. If you want to see the biography, it's actually on this great site, Zapagringo.com. Zapagringo.com.
Yeah, I've seen that site.
Yeah, so like there's the first biography of Kwesi life, a new African anarchist. I wrote up the kind of, you know, longest biography, and hopefully I can try to get into a book length.
I certainly hope that you do. Have you spoken to any potential publishers about it?
Yeah, there's a lot of interest. You know, I mean, obviously there's definitely a lot of interest. One of the problems is that with like most things talking about like that period of time is that, you know, there's not a lot of secondary material and most stuff is primary. So it is a matter of talking to a lot of the political prisoners, you know, and getting their recollection, and like, you know, and particularly, you know, political prisoners who are involved around the Black Liberation Army and, you know, various other underground groups. You know, part of the project that I'm working on is in hopes of trying to get their story out. You know, cause that's something that, you know, you really hear, you know, in terms of the history of the 60s and the 70s. So it's an ongoing project, and once I get the book published, I promise to be back on the show.
Definitely. I greatly look forward to reading it.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, at zapagringo.com, you can read portions of it, right?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I'll check that out. Yeah. All right, well, we have 15 minutes left, and I do want to play some more music. Should we risk one more call?
Okay.
I'm being talked into it against my my basic inclination, shall we say. Okay, nobody was there. Let's try this line. WBAI, you're on the air.
Hi, Bill.
Hi.
Hi, I have a quick question about the music collection that you've been playing from tonight.
Yeah.
Do you by any chance have anything in there from a group called Os Mutantes out of Brazil? They were one of the originators of Tropicália, and they had a song, No Vai Se Perder Por Aí, which was about disappearances.
Oh, indeed.
And it got them into trouble, and that's a great psychedelic political thing.
Well, I don't have it, so please send it to me, and I promise
I don't have it either. That's why I was requesting it. Yeah. I used to have it because I was in Brazil at the time when it came out, and I loved it, and a well-known anarchist begged me for the album, and in a stupor of goodwill, I gave it to him and never saw it again.
No good deed goes unpunished.
That's right.
Well, if you find it, send it along to us and we'll give it airplay.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Bye.
WBAI, you're on the air. I can't believe the boards are absolutely full. You see, when I want to take phone calls, nobody calls in.
Hello.
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 What do you have? What else do you have about Latin American psychedelia?
Well, I've got two albums. You know, I think I'm going to keep going with, since I didn't play as much of them as I thought, I'm probably going to keep going with these albums which I brought in next week. So if you want to hear more of this stuff, tune in 1 week from tonight. But the two albums from Latin America I've got are Si Para Usted, The Funky Beats of Revolutionary Cuba, from, I don't see the label. Oh, yeah, it looks like it's Waxing Deep Records, wherever they may be. I'm sure you can find them online. And the other is Let's see. Mexican psychedelic music from, which is part of the World Psychedelic Classic series from Normal Records in Bonn, Germany. And the one which I haven't played anything from, which I guess we'll go out with one of the cuts from the one we haven't heard yet, is Love's a Real Thing, the Funky Fuzzy Sounds of West Africa, World Psychedelic Classics, Volume 3, also from Normal Records in Bonn, Germany.
All right, go for it.
Okay, we will. Well, since people are so eager to call in, should we keep going with another couple of calls? WBAI, you're on the air. Turn down the radio, please. Turn down the radio.
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
All right, so my question?
You're on the air.
Oh, okay. I wanted to know, did your guest say that there were going to be some classes on gentrification at the Breck Forum?
Yeah, in the coming months, actually, and if you check out our website, www.breckforum.org. And not for this summer session, but definitely in the fall session, there will be classes on organizing and gentrification.
That'll be great. How do you spell Breck?
That's a good question. That's B-R-E-C-H-T, and the website is B-R-E-C-H-T-F-O-R-U-M, one word, .org.
Okay. Do you have a telephone number?
Yes, we do. You can call us at 212-242-4201. And if you give us a call, anyone who wants to give us a call, you can sign up to be on our mailing list, and we'll send you a catalog, which comes out four times a year and gives you all the classes and lectures and fun stuff that goes on in the Breckton. Once again, that number is 212-242-4201.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I should have had you give out that information earlier. You should also say where you're located.
Oh, yeah, we're located in historic West Village, right on the West Side Highway, 451 West Street, between Bank and Bethune. And the easiest way to get there, generally speaking, is taking the ACE L train to 8th Avenue, 14th Street, and walking west on 12th until you hit the West Side Highway. So you're basically walking west until you hit the water. And we're right over there on the West Side Highway, located right in the West Beth Artist Co-op complex. You know, which is a really cool spot.
And another quite obvious question is, whence the inspiration from Bertolt Brecht for your name?
Oh, yeah, that is a good question. You know, Brecht was, you know, a tremendous innovator, socialist, grand thinker, and, you know, in addition to the many people may realize, he was a German playwright, but he was also a poet, and a lot of the inspirations in terms of his poetry, like, really inspired the school's founder, Annette Rubinstein. And, you know, Brecht has this tremendous poem about everything changes, you know, saying, and even at the last moment, even your last breath, you know, everything changes. So that's really kind of the vibe that we really want to build in terms of Brecht Forum, in terms of really building a left arts and cultural community, you know, and that, you know, despite everything that looks pretty dark right now, particularly, you know, neoliberalism is running rampant, you know, everything changes. You know, saying there's always the possibility of transformation.
Well, these things certainly seem to come in historical cycles, and we've been waiting for it to come around again since, 1968 or something?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, should we... It's
about time.
Should we try to squeeze in one more call, just out of curiosity? WBAI, you're on the air. WBAI, you're on the air. Hello.
Thank you for taking my call, Mr. Weinberg.
Yeah, turn down the radio, please.
Killing the television.
Turn down the radio.
The television.
Oh, it's even worse.
I understand, however. That's why I called, actually. What outreach is being made to both high school and college students and those who... Are there any plans to develop a revolutionary mental health program for those who have burnt out from previous struggles?
Well, you sort of addressed that with the whole, revolutionary yoga or activist yoga?
Yeah, activist. Definitely activist yoga. And, And, you know, in terms of outreach, I mean, I'm the outreach coordinator, so. You know, one of the things that we're trying to develop, I mean, and mind you, we have a very small capacity as an organization, you know, but we're always willing to go into classrooms and go into community organizations who want to get, you know, more information, more political education, you know, and we have tremendously great relationships with, like, different professors and, you know, in the various campuses of the city. So, I mean, and that's definitely a big part of that, the outreach too, in terms of, you know, really kind of thinking generationally, what are we going to be leaving our children in the future, you know, and so we got to think about, you know, the 14-year-olds the kids who are 14 right now, who are going to be 18 in 2012, and making those type of decisions or whatever. So I think that, you know, it's very important for the left to think generationally as well. And I agree with the caller's point about mental health. I mean, you know, that's definitely something that's very important, and we need to work on that.
All right. Well, should we squeeze in one more? No, let's not. That's enough. Let's not be gluttons. Let's not be gluttons.
That's fine.
But I'll tell you what. We'll hopefully keep going with a similar conversation next week and play more of this wonderful third world psychedelic music next week. We're going to go out with... We're going to go out with a cut from the one CD we haven't heard yet, World Psychedelic Classic 3, West Africa. But once again, this has been the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade on listener-supported, non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. My name is Bill Weinberg, and we've been speaking with Kazembe Balogun and Marisol Ruiz of the Brecht Forum. Kazembe, do you want to give the contact information for the Brecht Forum one more time?
Oh, absolutely. And I want to say thank you so much for having us on. Once again, our phone number is 212-242-4201. That's 212-242-4201. Or we can check us out on the website, which is www.brechtforum.org, www.brechtforum.org.
Okay, with that, thank you so much for joining us, Kazembe and Marisol. And everybody out there, once again, join us next week because we're going to hopefully continue with some talk about particularly New York City and fighting back to save our homes, our neighborhoods, and our beloved city, if I can get the guest lined up that I want to get lined up. So and we'll be playing more of this great music. Meanwhile, we're going to go out with Musa Dumbia, we're going to play, yeah, from, actually, no, let's not play that one. We'll save that one for next week. Let's play, let's play the Orchestra Polirritmo de Cotonou Dahomey. Dahomey being the contemporary country of Benin. So, with that, do stay tuned for, Weaponry with Tom Whisker, if he's here. Coming up next on WBAI 99.5 FM.
You had the whole phone lit up.
I think it was
amazing.
No, you did,
Kazembe. No, you did.
No, it was a good show, definitely. I know when it's a good show. It was a good show tonight,
yeah,
believe me.
Cool.
I know when it's a flop, and I know when it's a good show, and tonight it was a good show. Okay. So, with that, let's hear some of the Orchestra Polirritmo de Cotonou Dahomey from Benin. And see you next week, and Assalamu Alaikum. We'll be right back.
Remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.